You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Hey, hey, welcome to The Crossover with me, Joe R. Lucas, brought to you by the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague. Throughout this season, this is where I'll bring you exclusive interviews with your favorite coaches, players, and legends. Each episode, I'll be getting down and dirty with some very special guests as I try to find out what life is like on and off the court for Europe's elite. Make sure to stay tuned in because no subject is out of bounds. Thank you so much for joining me once again on The Crossover. I'm your host, Joe R. Lucas, and I'm pretty sure I know why you've downloaded this episode. I'm sitting down in front of one of the most versatile big men that the EuroLeague has ever seen and might never see again. A five-time All-EuroLeague team selection, part of the All-Decade team, and a one-team global ambassador, and still to this day, the only player to record a triple-double in a EuroLeague game. And by the way, he did it twice. Please join me to welcome to the crossover the big Croatian, Nikola Vucic. Nikola, my man, how are you?
I'm great.
Welcome to the crossover. You feeling? You ready to go?
Yes, I'm ready for your
you got me.
Questions. Yes.
This is the first time I've ever done a podcast actually in a wine and cigar bar, so I'm really happy to be here.
You have to experience some new stuff. You know, you are retired. You cannot be all the time in a sport.
Exactly. I like this. I like this. Let's see if we can make it through this interview 1 hour with a couple whiskeys. according to my info, and I've got a whole bunch of info about you. Your career extended pretty much from 95 all the way to 2013, 18 years of playing professionally. It's a long time, especially for a player of your size and your stature.
Yeah, it's quite long if you take also in consideration that I came from the Croatian school.
Right.
The way of practicing and, you know, twice a day for 2-3 hours each practice. So I survived quite a long period.
You know, so many people talk about that, the fact that everybody talks about how they play so much now, but I think for the players, it's better to play than the way we used to practice back in the day, especially in Croatia.
That's what I always say, the people that talking this, they never work hard in practices.
Exactly, they get too tired in the game.
We were all signed to play much more games than practices.
But you started in Split at 14. Within the club, what were you doing? I mean, you're obviously tall at that point. What were you doing beforehand? And what did someone just see you walking down the street and say, "Hey, get in here"?
No, it's actually I coming from a small city and small village far from Split.
Say it for me. I'm sitting here. I'm looking at it.
Vrgorac.
Vrgorac.
Vrgorac. Yes.
Vrgorac.
Yeah. And you know, I grew up in a family that was doing things in field, strawberries, potatoes, tomatoes, and age of 14, you know, when you finish in Croatia, 8th grade, and you need to go to the high school. So I decided to go to Split, and because I was tall, and it happened also in the same time, Jugoplastika was amazing, Croatian national team won second place in Olympic Games in Barcelona. So somehow, you know, it was hype about basketball, and I decided to go to practice.
So you consciously went at the age of 14?
Yeah, I went there and said, look, I'm going to study, and you know, I want also to play basketball. You know, in Europe, basketball is not connected with school. You have a basketball and school.
Right.
So, but I came also age of 14, and players already practiced there for 5, 6, 7 years.
Of course, yeah.
It was like, but I was tall, and after 2 weeks, one coach decided, okay, let's keep him for a practice player. And this is what I needed. You know, after a few months, I already showed some progress. The other coach took me for the national team under 16. But they said, because from first day I came there until the age of 23, I had 2 practices a day. So
yeah, exactly. But I heard you mentioned it, something about strawberries and I heard that your hometown was the best place in Croatia
still,
for strawberries.
It's well
known. You used to bring them to everybody in Split.
Of course, you know, my mother and father would come and bring all these boxes and for everybody. So this was part of May and June procedure in the club.
I did a podcast last week with Robertas Yaptokas, and it was a pleasure to talk to you. But the funniest thing, you guys probably had a couple
of
duels
against
each other.
Of course,
as another big man out there.
Yeah.
And but he said he was a bad kid, kind of like a rebel child, and always had problems when he went to practice. He would skip practice sometimes if his parents dropped him off. Were you that?
No, I didn't have this luxury. I didn't have this luxury. You know, I had it was a war in Croatia. You know, I started playing basketball in the war of Croatia. Yeah. My father went in the war, and mother stayed without job. It was that kind of situation, so I didn't have a choice. I had to succeed. So I really was really professional from the first day until I finished my career, and then I started to meet you in these places.
You know, but like you talk about the war, and obviously it's a huge part of your life, and because it happened during your teenage years, and I'm always amazed at the number of kids that actually made it through such a difficult time and became amazing players. I mean, I talked to Alexander Dzicic also, and we talked about the fact that the basketball court in these countries, Yugoslavia back then and Croatia, were like sanctuaries for kids. Is that where the success came from, other than the great coaches and great development?
Basketball was a main sport in that time, more than football. Football overcame it in years after, but basketball was the top, and we had so many players that we could identify ourselves, dream about, become them. We had Dražen Petrović that went to the NBA, Tony Kukoc, you know, Divac was also these guys from Serbia.
Did you get to watch NBA games there? Was there coverage?
You could watch it, but it was late at night. But we succeed also to get tapes. You know, VHS.
Now you're starting to get as old as me.
Yes, and I'm a talk, yes. If I tell to my kids this, they'll not know what is this, you know. But we succeed, you know, of course. And we, I had the luck that I grew up, I could get tapes of Hakeem Olajuwon. I had the luck that every summer, because Kukoc, Dino Radja, Tabak, Perasovic, all these guys come in the summer and practice with us. They always need somebody for pickups, kids or this. They you had the chance to see from the best. They come and tell you stories about Hakeem, about David Robinson.
Because Zan played with Hakeem.
Yes. Yeah. So Hakeem, I used to ask Zan, please show me this move, this spin, how he's doing it, you know, details. Wow, dream come. You know, now you remind me of some beautiful things of my, you know, from my career.
It's crazy. Yeah, but now, some of the uglier things. What was it like, I mean, on a daily basis to live through what was going on in the war? Because, you know, most of us see in the news, you see so many things, and it always looks terrible, but was it as difficult as it looked?
Look, of course it was difficult, you know. When your father is in the war and you know that he's in the middle of battle, you know, it's not easy to you know, you wait all the time that somebody will call you and say, something happened. But we, on the other side, we had the luck. We didn't have the internet, we didn't have the media and all this that we could have the news on the daily basis that they are crazy. You know, you had the 7:30 at night, you had the news, main news.
Right.
You know what's going on. So on the point of this panic, it wasn't so big. Of course, living in the war situation and you have a daily basis, you have to go to the shelter, and we had the shelters in the gym, and it happened a few times that we had to, from practice, we ran in the shelter. Thanks God, nothing happened, but...
yeah, but it's still a scare.
Of course, you know. And of course,
your father fighting at the same time. That can't be.
This is, you know, when you get a call from him and you see him, it's like, you know, he's alive, you know.
Wow, that's just incredible. That's chilling sometimes. Yeah. You played your first game at around 16. You joined the first team. What was, do you remember what it was like to get in that first game?
Wow. I remember the game.
You had some great players on your team.
I remember the game, and I always remember my first basket. It was against my great friend Emilio Kovacic against Rinjeva. It was 6th of December.
You remember the date
of
and everything.
Of course, it was St. Nicholas. You know, first basket, you have to remember. You know, and you know, I scored six points, I think, this game, and I was like shaking after.
Was that an important? Were you in at an important time, or was it like at the end when you were winning by 20?
No. Look, I had the luck that, again, I grew up with the coaches that had the courage to put the players
in tough
times. They always said, you become player in tough times, not in the garbage time.
Right.
And I had the luck that I was the best player of under-16 championship. I was big...
You won the gold medal also.
Gold medal. This was first Croatian gold medal in...
there was a cadet team.
Cadet
and
team.
And then the U18 also you
and
won.
And then a year after we won in U18 in France, back-to-back. It was really generation with Cesar, and we succeeded to do it, some unbelievable stuff. Of course, it was in the middle of the war. It was important for Croatia to do it. But on the other side, we also had so much time of practice. People, when I tell the stories, we used to practice 4 months before the championship. it was really, really crazy.
I was informed along the way from some mutual friends that we have that around the age of 19, you just wanted to give up basketball totally. You weren't getting paid. You weren't getting much playing time. Things were a little bit difficult. But you started working out with a personal trainer, from what I understand. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about, but...
No. Actually, you know what? I want to talk about this kind of stuff, and I'm talking lots of about this with the players. I was, after my... started playing good, starting doing good, change coach, and come different coach. He's great coach. I cannot say he's not a good coach. He's a great coach, but he has different ideas. He came and said, listen, you are not allowed to do lifting. It's killing your body. You have to do everything with your body, not with the lifting. And you're not allowed to shoot from outside. So you're like, I'm white guy that is slow. He cannot jump and is not allowed to do the lifting. It's not connection to my brain.
It's the only thing I know how to do. Yes, let me do it.
Yes. And also, look, it's Yugoplastika in wartime. And that year, I get the salary on 1st of September, and the next salary we get 1st of July.
From September to July without getting paid?
Without any kind of pay. And
I understand you had to get loans from people. You had to ask people to
out. No, I had the luck that my wife supported me in that time.
Were you married at that time?
I wasn't. We were girlfriend, boyfriend, and girlfriend. But okay. She decided to invest in me. That's why I'm joking with her. But it was a tough time, again, because I had the parents that they were without job after the war. And it was really, I didn't say that I want to give up. I just find a way how to avoid situation, like to skip out of this situation. I took the personal trainer. He followed me through all my career. After that, his name is Joško Vlašić. He's the father of Blanka Vlašić, the high jumper.
Okay, yeah.
And his son is now playing in CSKA football, Nikola Vlašić, also Croatian national team. And
he has pedigree.
Yes. And at that time he is also a guy that was with me in the club. He was my trainer in the club. But I decided, and he didn't get paid also for 10 months.
Yeah.
But I told him, listen, you want to be my coach. When all this mess finish, I'm going to give you half of my salary. Just I want you to be with me. So two of us succeed to, after practice we escaped. We all our tricks to get out of this.
So your coach didn't know that you were...
I know. My coach didn't know. And it was funny. We had a story like in February. Coach came to me and told me, listen, you see what I told you? You stop to work the lifting and now you become faster, you become stronger, you become everything. I told him, yeah, coach, what can I do? I'm young. I don't know what to do. So, and we were working at 3 hours a day and coach supplied me also with all kind of supplements that, we succeed to find a way how to get these supplements.
So he knew what was best for you.
He knows, of course. I trusted him from the beginning and I was right, and I was working hard. And I remember my coach always was telling me, and this is what I'm saying all the time around players, most important thing about player, for the player, is to stay healthy. To stay healthy, you have to take care of your body. And whatever you do, whatever kind of exercises you're doing, whatever you practice you are doing, make sure that you don't harm your, that you do everything not to harm yourself. And this stay all my life, and I finished career without any kind of major injuries, no surgeries, nothing.
It's not gone wood on that. I don't think it's going to happen now. With a couple
I don't
of things
care.
That we do.
Now if you get injured, at least you get some days off. So it's
when I first came back, and I was watching you on TV with the team, with Maccabi, and I was like, that's Jan Tabak, isn't it? Everybody,
How many times I took pictures as a Jean Tabak? I don't even convincing people differently. Hi, Jean. Hey, what's up? How are you?
I heard you even sign his autograph.
Everything, Jean. I mean, what can I say? We are from same city. We know, me and Jean have stories from 1992. Because his
father... Maybe I need to sit down with the two of you together.
Yes, his father-in-law, it was my sport director, my GM.
Right.
And he's the guy that supported me through all my career in Split.
Obviously, I've been talking to Zan's wife.
Of course, and his wife, and so many times I slept in his house, and with Gorana, his Zan's wife, brother.
You basically live with the family.
With the family, because it was, in that time, I was living actually with the families that the club will find, and they will give them some money, and this family will give me food and the room to sleep. So that's how at that time we used to work. And lots of weekends I sleep in his house, and so we have the stories from the, you know, long time, 1992. I mean,
you know, from everything I've heard and everything that I've talked about you, it's just, it seems like they were just a very extremely helpful family to your career. So that's
through my career, all family, and I have to say that Rato Tvrdić is the legend of Croatian basketball. He's father of Gorana. And this kind of advice is you cannot get, you know, so easy. And he was always a guy that...
But sometimes when you're young, it's hard to accept the advice. You hear it, but...
It's true, but again, I was in a situation that I couldn't...
Another choice.
Yes, no, it's, you know, very young I understood that experience is something that you, when you can get it for free from somebody, it's the best present you can get.
Exactly.
Because these guys passed from 30 years of basketball, they saw everything in their life, and when they tell you, don't go left, go right, you have to go right, because they know that the left is the danger, so...
And I think that's always been that mentality from the Croatian players, from the Serbian players. It's always been that very strict, hard, just do as you're told and it works. And it's obviously worked very well for all of them.
Of course. Look, my coach from my youth team from 14 to 18 was Mladen Šestan. He's a coach that after that I had academy with him, and he's now also with Dragan Berner in USA. And I'm laughing with him. You know, the 4 years with him, I never talked to him. Four years... I never had any
kind of conversation.
I had only orders that I followed. So, you know, what do you mean answer to coach? I don't understand that sentence.
That's crazy. During this time now, obviously the war is escalating as you're growing, and there's so much tension between Serbia and Croatia with, you know, the Belgrade basketball clubs and the Croatian. What were those games like? I mean, I remember when I played against Zagreb one time and Zelko walked out onto the court. Yeah. It was the loudest thing I've ever heard in my entire life in a basketball gym. It's just amazing.
It was in the beginning, it was tough. And I had an amazing experience. The first game between Croatian clubs and the Serbian clubs, it was 1997. We were in the group, in EuroLeague group with Partizan. So they were not allowed to play games in Croatia or Serbia. We chose to play in Pesaro in Italy. And they chose to play in Saloniki in Greece. And it was unbelievable. The ship full of our fans went to Pesaro. And we beat big Partizan with Tomašević, with Drobnjak, and I don't remember. It was lots of big players at that time. And we beat them. When we landed to Croatia, it was in Split. It was full airport of the people that wait for us and support us.
Amazing.
And it was a big success for us. And then we went to play also in Saloniki. Full gym of, half gym was special forces of Greece police, and half gym was their fans. And we succeed to beat them there. I was 19 years old kid. I scored 14.7 rebounds. I remember, of course.
You got all your stats down.
No, not all stats. This is amazing. But some games I really remember because they were my, the games that they were so big for the club and for that you stay in your brain, stay in your memory, and we succeed to beat them there. And you can't imagine what's happened in Split when we came back. Like, we won the title.
Yeah, it's amazing. What was, you're talking about the games that you remember. I'm jumping a little ahead on what I want to talk about, but I'm going to ask you right now, when was the moment when you said, man, I could play this game. I'm going to be a good player. Was there a moment, or was it just, you just had to keep working? And
I didn't have this moment. You know, I was just keep working. Again, I told you, I had a dream. You know, I grew up in Jugoplastika that won three titles in a row. So from the beginning, my only dream was to win EuroLeague, not to play in NBA, not to play this. And I never understood the sentence, play. You know, for me, it was always win. You know, point of this game was to win the titles, not to play the game. I mean, everybody can play. You can go pick up games. You know, what's the point of playing? Everybody playing. So my dream always was to follow winning and trying to get titles. So this was a dream. I didn't think
everything else was pretty much secondary for you. You just wanted to be there to
win. This is one of the reasons why I never finished in NBA. Because
I'm going to ask that question later.
Okay, so we come to this question. I don't
jump. We'll come to that. You talked about the financial difficulties, not getting paid from September to June. At one point, it's what, 9 months, I guess. And you had an offer to go to Olimpia Ljubljana and play, which I would suppose it was a paid offer. The people that were supporting you at this time, like your girlfriend, who is your wife to be, your family, and so, what did they think about that? Like, what do you?
I tell you what happened. I didn't know about this offer many years after I find out.
You didn't know about it at the time.
In that time, you think it was like this: somebody, they come to club and offer, and the club say no, and nobody telling you. There is no. Okay. It wasn't thousands of agents or something, you know. So when the club say no, it's no. There is nothing to discuss with. So player, the club say no, and that's it.
And that was it. They basically controlled your rights.
Yeah,
and,
control your rights, control everything. In that time, you had to sign the contract with the 6 years with the club. It was very strict with FIBA. You couldn't leave the club. If you leave the club, you get suspension for 2-3 years. So no.
So in all reality, that the lack of knowledge of you not being informed about that possible offer brought you to Maccabi.
So brought me to Maccabi because
it was kind of a good thing in the long run.
Yes, I became also age of 19 or 20. I don't remember now exactly. I became captain of the team.
And in Split.
Yes, and look, club was always fair to me. I must say this. They always say, listen, you will not stay here until end of the contract. We want to make money on you. So your thing is to fight to be the best possible. Trust me, we are working on this to bring you offer.
Oh, so they had it very clear what they were going to do.
It was very clear. You don't stay to the end. You'll be on the market. Your job is to be the best possible you can be. So this was, I know that I need to survive and I need to get, and then my money will come. I just need to be focused on my job, And in that time, you didn't have a big contracts. You had the contracts that you can live good. I could support a little bit my family. And, I had everything that I needed. I couldn't buy the car. I couldn't buy the apartment. But food and all the things that I needed for my career, I had it.
And did you speak any English before that, before you came here? Any Hebrew, obviously.
English, we studied in school.
I heard that your favorite word was excellent.
Excellent.
Everything was excellent.
Listen, when you come from Croatia in the war and you come to Maccabi Tel Aviv, what you can say is not excellent. You came to the...
Yeah, but you didn't exactly come to a so-called peaceful place.
Also, amazing story. I remember coming to my wife's family. We sit on the table, and I told them, "Listen, guys, I have an offer from Siena, an offer from Maccabi." So my mother-in-law say, "Yes, Italy, pasta, pizza, cappuccino." I told them, "Yes, excellent. I love pasta, pizza, but I decided to go to Maccabi." "What are you talking about? They just started Intifada. You want to go from the war to the war? You're crazy. You're taking my daughter and this." I told them, "Listen, sorry, guys, but Maccabi is Maccabi. I know what is Maccabi. I know what is the club, and this is my, I will say no to much bigger clubs than Siena to go to Maccabi.
This is an incredible place. Now you're so lucky to basically call this place home now. I mean, Tel Aviv is one of the most beautiful cities. My favorite city to travel to throughout Europe when I play.
This country, this city is my home, and my family loves it, and my daughter is born here. And so I came here 2001.
But you didn't actually play here that year.
That year I came here, Nate Huffman, rest in peace, he went to, decided to go to NBA, but he didn't succeed, so they decided to bring him back. And I saw that in my age, I get a call from Boša Tanić from Asvel, and it was a really good situation for me to go one more year to play with a coach that told me, "Listen, I give you open hands, you can give you everything, come with play with me." It's an amazing person, helped me a lot in my career. First year when you go out, and you get such a person like Boša Tanić to lead you. Wow, this was.
This is your first year, and you even went to France and led them to the first championship in Asvel in 21 years, I think it was.
21 year. It was really crazy season. We played very, I couldn't say bad basketball, but we had struggled until the May, until playoff. We were, I think, finished sixth. We're really, nobody gave attention. They already signed the coach for next year. But we came to playoff like different team.
It's 16 points and 7 rebounds a game you averaged that year. Yeah. In your first year. And again, I'm going back to the fact that this is really your first real year of playing in a team, and you take the team to the championship and you win a game. And from what I understand, the coach is Boša Tavić, no? Right?
Yeah, Boša.
Boša. He was going a bit crazy in a timeout, I heard. and he was going nuts, and you actually stepped up and like calmed the situation.
No, look, this was the story of the final of the second game. We won first game in Ortiz, and second game we played in our place.
Three game series,
best of three. So we won there one. If you win the home, we are champions. And in the gym was like 45 degrees, no air condition. It was in sun. It was already 27 of June. It was like summer. And he was cursing. I missed some shot, and he was cursing from the bench like crazy. All my family cursed in one moment. So I turned to the back to him and start to curse him back. And thanks God, it was like 30 seconds to the end of the quarter. I curse him back like crazy. And we went to the halftime there, and we put ice on the head. And then I was thinking, oh my God, what I did. You know, first time in my life, I talked to coach, and all my sentences was mentioning his family and parents and everything. It was like going out crazy on him. So I didn't know what to do. So coach finished all the meeting, told me, come here. So we went under the shower. He told me, you know, I was so embarrassed. I didn't know what, you know, he told me, listen to me. When you see that I lost it, it's fucking hot in this gym. When you see that I lost it, you curse me back again. Send me wherever you want because you are 100% right.
He told you that.
Yes, I was like, coach, sorry, I wanted to apologize. What apologize? I was the idiot. You are the right. Well, go now and win fucking game.
Well, wait a minute. I think you won the game with a shot, right?
I scored the last shot.
That helps.
Diao missed the shot and you get the rebound and we start to celebrate. And, you know, Bosha is my friend, and you know, we talk each other, we see each other, even in both house in the same island in Croatia, where I have a house, so we see each other every summer. He is the best person I met, in the craziest coach, and that's, I always crazy. Tell him this, I used to tell him, coach, where is that button you press every time to come to the court? Told me why, because you become, cross the line, you become monster. You are the best guy in the world I ever
outside
met.
Outside the line.
Outside, and you step on that line, you become monster.
I did the first episode of the crossover was with David Blatt. I don't know if you heard it yet, but he actually kicked in the Olympic Games in London. He kicked Alexis Sever and Sergei Monia off the team in the middle of the game for talking back to him in the timeout. So no. I'm thinking, I'm reading this about you, and I'm like,
No,
you got brought into the shower and got complimented and said thank you.
Yeah, he told me, listen, if this happens, you do this again to me because I lost it. It's a crazy hot in this gym. So we, you know, I said, this person, you know, I came there, I didn't have a car, he gave me immediately his car, he went with taxi. We used to practice twice a day, every day, no days off, and it's like...
It's old school.
Old school, and in May, we practiced twice a day, and we used to tell him, coach, listen to me, I will need 3 summers to rest after you. 3 summers in a row, not 1 summer.
After seeing this, obviously Maccabi takes you right back.
Yeah.
They bring you there, and they're like, okay, that's enough of putting this guy on loan.
Yes. So I came in Maccabi, really start, you know, I was ready, much more ready than first year, with much more confidence. I just won title, and I came in the team that opened position for me. I became first center, so really, really great steps in my career.
When you went to France and then you came back to Maccabi, were you married at that time?
Yes, I married with my wife the moment that we decided to leave Croatia.
Okay, so when you left Croatia, you were married. Yeah. So not only did your mother-in-law get mad at you for not going to...
Also to coming
to
back,
Italy,
yes.
Italy, you come here and then you go to France.
Yes, and then she was telling you, wow, it's France, it's great, stay in France, it's beautiful.
Okay.
I told her, it's Maccabi, it's Maccabi, I'm going back, whatever you say.
You had it set up in your mind that Tel Aviv and Maccabi were your
Maccabi,
place.
Maccabi, you know, Maccabi in Croatia, it's icon. You know, same icon as the Jugoplastika, and this was our dream. Bigger than Real Madrid, Barcelona, you know, we had this dream, Maccabi. And that year that I came, they were champions.
Yeah.
Of Super League, so it's coming back to champion. What champions want you.
And, I mean, this is basically your home now.
Yeah.
I mean, you still go back and forth to Croatia, I assume, to see family and everything. But
yeah,
this is...
Summers I'm in Croatia. My family is here. Kids going to school. My daughter is born here, so...
I mean, I love this place. The one thing I've always said about playing here as an ex-player and even coming to watch a game is the fans are incredibly intense, but they're very knowledgeable and they're very respectful. If a player from another team has a good game,
yes, no.
They always say that player.
No, we have 10,000 coaches, educated coaches.
Educated,
yes. You know, it's they want to make the subs, they want to call the plays, they want to change. They you know, but they really respect all the big legends. That when they come here, they get respect from the crowd, and because this is basketball. You know, I played in Greece, I played in Turkey, I played in Croatia, but this is the only place that you never get anything thrown on the court.
Yeah,
you can get boo, you can get, you know, the things that they want to disturb you, but really they respect the sportsmen, they respect the sport. And if somebody has, you know, coming the legends, Panoulis, Bodiroga, this time they always had the biggest respect.
Yeah, I've never, in this court or some other courts I've never felt threatened by anything.
No.
It's always been to the fact where I've had some really good games here, and the fans even cheered for me.
Yes,
and it was just a very special moment, and it's beautiful to play here. But I mean, if we take year by year here, we're going to be here forever. So I'm going to go right through 5 Israeli league titles, 2 European champions, which are back to back. I believe it's the only back to back as
after
of right
Europe
now in the modern era. You got 2 more Final Four appearances after that. 2004, you averaged 17.6 rebounds, 3 assists on a team that had guys like Derek Sharp and Saris, Cesarkevicius. You had Anthony Parker. How do you get the ball with those guys around?
That's my question. I had the luck, you know, when you're playing with Sharas, first of all, when you're playing with Sharas, that was my biggest experience. He was the best player and coach that I played with. And
you mean coach on the floor?
On the floor. And first of all, you felt great confidence. You felt that if you are in the right spot, in the right place, you're getting that ball in the right moment.
Right.
So you need to be ready. And
be looking at the ball, because he's the type of guy who hits you in the face with the ball.
Of course, and curse you to the death if you didn't get it or you wanted to play. So he educated us very fast. You know, he put us in a spot. Of course, Anthony is the best foreigner ever played, I think, in Europe, in my opinion.
Yeah, be careful.
you are best scorer. But he's really given to...
He was incredible.
He was really incredible. He played 5 years in Maccabi, 5 Final Fours, and 3 titles. So he had the luck to play with these guys. And what was the most important about all of us, we were really as a family, not as a team, a family. So this is what brought us to this level.
You played that year 34 minutes a game. And, I mean, you were pretty much averaged 30 minutes a game throughout your first 5 years here in Maccabi. And what are the differences between then and now? Because obviously we were almost lucky enough to play 34 minutes on the court a game. Yeah. Now it's the mode, the fashion is let's rotate and everybody plays a couple minutes here, a couple minutes there.
Look, I don't know how to explain this. Maybe because of the way how we were used to practice and how we used to prepare it for this, playing 30 minutes, it's something that was normal. Okay, in today's time, you have maybe 10 games more a season, 10, 12 games more
than
a
season. It's not that many more.
But it's not so many that will make it so much that you have to make such a big difference, you know. And we had more practices in that time. So,
absolutely. Way more.
So you know this. But, you know, it's a new time, it's new fashion, new technologies. They're trying, you know, they're going with a new flow. Me as a GM, I have to follow this, you know. I cannot try to push something that is go... You know, it's. I always believe that you have to go with the beliefs of the majority, because otherwise pushing something out of this. And you can see that also the coaches are changing. You know, even Obradovic practicing once a day from 11 to 12.
Yeah, 12. I missed that boat, unfortunately. Because
you missed it. Exactly. You see,
that didn't happen with me.
He also, you know, that's why I said, you know, everybody start to feel good with this new system.
I look back now, I'm like, man, I wouldn't mind playing now. You know, longevity, you play 16, 20 minutes, you come in, you come out.
I would play until 45.
Yeah, no one expects you to score 25 a game. Exactly. You know, it's 6-7 points, you're fine. Yeah. And then after the years here, the last year you kind of dwindled a little bit in minutes, and you took off to Olympiacos to play in Olympiacos. What was that departure like for you? Because there your minutes dropped even more so in Olympiacos.
Look, after playing 20, 30 minutes per game in Maccabi, 29-7, I think, last minute season or something like this, I had an injury. Last season I had an injury. I slipped on the court and I stretched my MCL, so it took me 3 months out. This was only my major injury in career. I didn't need surgery or something, but it took me a little bit down. Even that year we finished in the final of the EuroLeague, and... But then Olympiacos decided to take me, and I have to say I'm very thankful to the family owners of Panathinaikos, Olympiacos, that they decided to bring me. It's really was great 2 years. We played 2 Final Fours. We had the bad luck that we had on the other side Obradovic, Diamantidis, Spanoulis, shot us.
Batiste,
Calates, like 6-7 old decade players. It's like
that's kind of like the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA with
Golden State. You know? Yeah. We played against Golden State, and but you know, I came in Olympiacos and I played 12-13 minutes, and the first 3-4 games, I start to feel bad. You know, so I went to talk to the coach. I told the coach, listen, I want to see what I have to do to play more or something. So Coach Yanakis told me, why bother yourself? This is why I brought you here. This is what I accept. He really explained me what he expects from me. So everything for the team. You know, I want to succeed. I want to win the titles. If my game is 12, 13, 15, 16 minutes.
But did you honestly think that you can help the team at 16, 17 minutes?
No, of course I was convinced that I can play 30 and, you know, go to my number. I was in a good age. You know, I was 30, so it was
exactly.
good age.
You're a great age.
Great age,
point.
You know. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you have coaches that have different decisions and you can fight it or you can do what is the best for the team. You know, you have to, you know, support it. So I supported. Coach never had any problems with me. We stayed great friends and everything through these 2 years. Again, we played 6 finals. We had bad luck that we won only one, but we were in all the competitions, we were in 6 finals.
Yeah, you won the Greek Cup, I think.
Greek Cup, yeah.
The one that you won. So 2 seasons there at Athens, and you head off to Turkey, to Efes.
Yeah, I went to Turkey. I wasn't sure if I, you know, I was waiting in Split. I practiced with them, and then they called me in October to go there. That was tough year, and too tough for me. And that year, maybe, you know, because of the toughness make me, you know, like maybe I quit from the basketball.
Let me ask you this. Was it going back to Split a sentimental thing for you to go back and kind of give back to what they gave you?
Yes, you know, it is. Split was a very tough situation. You know, the president of Split invited me and told me, listen, Split is in bankrupt. We are a dead club.
This was at the end of your career.
That was the season that I finished career. I decided to come and Split. You know, mm-hmm. He told me, "Listen, you can be president, player, choose.
choose your role."
And you know, I felt, look, this club gave me everything in my life. It was in tough times, and they really, I know what they did for me to succeed. And I said, "Okay, listen, I do it." And I came to the gym, to the club. We had 3 senior players. No money, didn't get salary for so many years. Everybody was talking, look, we go to bankrupt. And together with 2-3 people in the club, we succeed to bring club year after to Adriatic League. We succeed to do the public company out of the club. We made such a big boost that people bought the stocks, City bought the major stocks. And, you know, we saved the club. It was very tough times. I couldn't believe that I'd fight with so many people.
But you were actually trying to sell the club to companies, to sponsors,
yes,
also
yes,
and while you were playing.
Yes, but,
and
you know,
managing.
I was working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday I would make practice. Saturday I play the game.
I like that deal. Yes. That's a good deal.
I didn't like it because, you know, I still was going. I was younger and I could, you know, push it. I was succeed to do it. And even this year we qualified to Adriatic League. It was a big thing. You know, it was just before you becoming public company, we succeed to qualify to Adriatic League. And it was big boost. And we succeed to bring lots of people inside the club and make the atmosphere that Jugoplastika is alive, and we succeed to, and really we succeeded. We did things that are really, I have these 3 friends that president, the head of marketing, and they're forcing me to write the book about this.
Oh, really?
Because it would be an interesting book. It was a unique story because through all this process, we succeed also to help big Croatian company to succeed. You know, we were looking for sponsors. Nobody wanted to be sponsors of us. They was offering us so small amount of money that
free food in a restaurant,
yes,
50% off.
So there is one big company that they were bankrupt also. They were also about to bankrupt. And I get crazy idea. I called the guy that was in charge of the bankruptcy. They started already this process.
Yeah, yeah.
So I called the guy and I told him, I want to meet with you. He told me, what do you want to meet with me? We cannot give you anything. I told him, no, I give to you. So we went there. I told him story, look, we are going to be your sponsors.
Of the company that's going bankrupt.
Yes. Club becomes sponsor of the company. He said, we're going to be your sponsors. And that time they were selling like 7,000 bottles a month. Nothing. They were just, you know, surviving somehow.
Right.
And after we make the press conference and we announce that we are becoming their sponsors and we start to promote them, end of my time, they were selling like 3 million bottles a year.
Really?
And our time. And we get also the international award for the marketing in sport. in Ljubljana,
like
they invite
us to marketing. Sport, yes. Yeah, that's incredible.
It's an incredible story. And, you know, the company is now alive, sold, and they continue to be sponsors of the club.
Who would ever think that two bankrupt entities can
both,
get together?
Both survived and then survived. With the twist that right. we did to them. And after that, after they become liquid and they become to succeed, they become our sponsors.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful. This question that I have is something that personal that I felt at one time in my career, and I'm going to ask you this question. It's a little bit personal because I looked at your career and I looked at everything you did at Maccabi and then everything that went afterwards. There's almost like two different sections of your life, so to speak, because of the time and the numbers. Was Maccabi just such a special place for you that when you left, you never felt the same feeling, the same emotion? Because I kind of felt that after my years in Real Madrid, going anywhere else, and I'm not saying anything about Greece, but it was like everything else was like a letdown.
Look, Maccabi was dream. It was dream that become true. You know, playing four Final Fours with them, winning two titles, played four finals, not four Final Fours.
Right,
we played finals. And made here such amount of friends, and that we stay in the contact all the time, make you feel like you are home. I have to say, when I went to Olympiakos, I had the same thing. I don't know if you know, but the moment that I went to Olympiakos and Maccabi agreed to play first game, preseason game playing Maccabi. So I didn't know until the last moment they made game for me.
I was for you.
It was,
for the...
Yes, it was 11,000 people with my tickets printed with my picture.
Really?
They raised my jersey. And they made for
that
me.
That was here in Tel
here
Aviv?
In Tel Aviv, you know. First preseason game, here full gym, I was like shocked. I was like paralyzed. The way how they did to me, and I was thankful to them, you know, that they did something unbelievable, both teams. So my connection with Olympiakos is also high, and I'm highly respectful to these people. Until today, we are in contact, and whatever we need help each other, we are you know, we
that's
are together.
That's a great thing that they did. And you don't see that so much in Europe as you do, you know, these things in the States.
This one said, they always say, why didn't make the farewell game, you know, but I had it.
You had it before.
I had it when I was playing, you know,
exactly,
this is
unique. Exactly. And then you walked away from the game. I remember I decided to leave the game, and I was so happy, and I was like, I was so positive about my decision to not play again. I was still young, so to speak, in today's age. I was 35, and the first year I was like the happiest person in the world. And then the second year, all of a sudden, like something started eating away at the inside of me, and like wanted to go back and play. Did that happen to you, or you? Because you stayed in the game. I walked away from it.
I you know. I never had a pause of 1 week, because the moment that I finished with FS Pilsen, I went to the Split.
Right.
The Split, I had a battle for 2 years, and then Maccabi came and told them, listen, we want you to come back and to be sport director. So it was, you know, everything was connected in my life until today. From age of 40 until today, I didn't have 1 week off out of basketball, so it's...
But retiring from, and a lot of times there's, you know, like Sardis is a big thing for me, because he just left the game and became a great coach, and he's and becoming a better coach every year, and that's hard to do for a basketball player to leave the game and become a good coach. You left the game and became a general manager there and Split, and also here. But you can't tell me that at the age of 40, you don't look at players sometimes and like, he's not that good, I could take him.
Of course.
We still have that attitude. You know, I don't have that anymore.
I still have this, you know, watching the game, I have these tics that I will pass the ball. you cannot get out of this, out of system, you know, especially when you stay. You know, I have a luck that still I sometimes working with the players and showing them some stuff, and I'm still impressed how they are, you know, the new generations that are coming, they didn't pass through technique like we used to do. The amount
exactly.
of repetition.
Yep.
So when I showed them the details, they were impressed with the details that they were basic for me. But the amount of repetitions that we have, you know, they don't know that this, to teach them this small detail you need to take them a few thousand repetitions, and it's not coming over the night. You know, I can show you the small detail, and it looks nice, and you can try it, but until you become part of your game, it's taking so many repetitions.
You know, the problem with that nowadays is you see guys doing things that are just not normal. You see Steph Curry, the way he shoots. Yeah. You know, you saw Juan Carlos Navarro for years shooting three-pointers, like falling from one side to another. But what I try to tell players when I talk to them is, like, these guys had the basics down before they began to do that. And if you get the basics down, then you can score any way you want. But, you know, you have to get that fake, the one dribble. You know, how many times have you done the fake dribble to the right, pull up and jump shot? Millions.
This is the most important thing that disappeared from basketball. It's repetitions. Repetitions. And if you see even Stephen Curry, all these guys, if you see their pre-game,
it's amazing.
But this is amount of repetition, yet millions of repetitions to become such excellent in something. It's not didn't come out, you know, people are trying to imitate, they're trying to do it. At the end of the day, he's spending hours and hours to master this.
Of course, nobody sees that.
There are exception people, there are exceptional athletes. Of course, they have their unique stuff. But I always said to the players that I'm talking to them, you will never hear a story about huge player, huge athlete that will tell you, listen, I didn't work hard. I was just, you know, going around and doing this.
Never.
Always is connected with different huge amount of work.
The issue, I think, now is we live in a society where you said before, you know, when I was bringing up some of your information, Google. But Google is killing people because it's a now society. We want everything now. Yeah. We don't want to work for it. We don't have to work for it because if I want to find out who sang a song, what the name of the group is, or who won the title in 2006, I just go to Google and I pick it up and it's there. Yeah. And I think people have lost that will to work and to succeed.
Yeah. Look, there is one basic thing that you cannot beat. It's an amount of work. There is a great book, Outliers, Way of Success.
Outliers. Great book.
A great book. But it say one thing that people should just read this sentence and stop. They don't need to read the book. Just sentence that's saying it. To become master is something you need 10,000 hours.
10,000 hours. Yes. It's one of my favorite books.
So 10,000 hours you need to do to be. You cannot do it in 3, 4, 5. They say in the book that the chess player succeed to make it in 9,000 hours.
Yeah.
But you know people need to divide these minutes and everything to make this. How many days is this hard work that you become master?
They talked about so many different people in that aspect. Also, they talked about
all aspects, no sport, of course.
Yeah, no, the whole situation now with everything being in your hands at the time that you need it has gotten people away. But one of the things we talked about earlier, I talked about in the introduction, was your triple double, your two triple doubles.
Yeah.
One of them was, your first one was triple-double, you know, you did the 12 points, 11, and then you went 27 points, 10 and 10. That's pretty impressive. And that hasn't been touched yet. It was close to being touched last year with Kalates and Luka, Doncic.
Yeah.
You got rid of Doncic.
Yeah, the Kalates, you're stuck
Nick's
here.
Still around. What are you going to do about that?
I don't know, man. I had my record for a long time enough that, you know, I have no problem that somebody else will take it. It's impressive achievement. And, you know, if especially Kalates can take it, he deserves it to be, you know, somebody to do it because he has this ability. In Europe, Europe is not easy to do it.
It's very difficult.
You know, it's not so many big guys that can pass, but especially today, basketball.
But wait a minute. It was more difficult when you did it because the assist wasn't as easy to get.
I had another two triple doubles that when we made our statistics, we had a guy that made our statistics. I had another two triple doubles that they were not count. And I had four assists. It was funny because I had points, I had rebounds, but then I had four assists and I couldn't believe I had four assists. So this guy told me, no, he had 11. Because in that time, if you didn't pass the ball exactly on the layup without there is no assist.
And even at that time, if the person dribbled to the basket,
it was a dribble. No dribble. What dribble? Yeah. You cannot be dribble.
You have to give it to him underneath the basket or wide open shot.
Exactly. So,
I mean, I know what you're saying, and we all say that. You know, I have the points thing, and people are always asking, like, you know, who's going to, you know, do the 63 points, and blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, if someone ever does it, that'd be great. And that's a lie.
No,
you want to be the only one in that list right now.
Okay, but, you know, I can tell you that you're going to be the only one that scores 63 in EuroLeague for sure.
But now,
for sure. In this game, until they go to 48 minutes and speed up the game and make court faster, wider.
And play 35, 40 minutes.
Your record is more secure than mine.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, you're only 40. It's what we talked about earlier. Do you still look at, like, not guys on your team? I don't want to talk about your team. I want to talk about, like, in the league and say, man, look, he's like, God, I'm only.
Look.
Because when I was 40, I still thought I could play.
You know, I had lots of old players that they always used to say, today time I score 40, today time I score 40. You know, I really feel that this time today, the basketball, it's not nicer than it used to be in 10, 15, 20 years ago. Because it's.
What do you mean by not nice?
Not more. It's. I grew up in the technical basketball.
Right.
Much more fakes. Like I said, like I didn't see pass behind the back for years.
Yeah.
Some I didn't see no look pass. You have, you know, Miloš Teodosic left or see El Kalates do this sometimes.
Right.
But you couldn't. You could, in before time, you could see on daily basis. You could see passes that they were unique. You sent people on one way and you pass another way. Something that was, you know, fans were doing out now. They all fell in love with dunk.
Yeah.
Dunk is like, wow. But the rarely passes like that were, you know, I had a great sentence from Tony Kukoc used to say this and it always stay in my head. Basket make one guy happy and assist make two guys happy.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
This is what I was always enjoy the pass, you know, because you see the happiness of your teammate and of course you are happy because you served him on the right. And this time today, you cannot see these passes that were like, wow.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, I think, like you said, Kalates, Doncic, Teodosic were guys that dropped what we call in the States those dimes, you know, that just boom, right in the right moment, and you got the ball to that person.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, it makes two people happy. And even though I was known as a scorer, some of my favorite plays were when I was able to give the ball up. You know, even that, you know, when you're in the low post and you make that cross-court pass to an open three. And
you say it now. Yeah,
yeah.
Good.
It feels so good to do that, you know.
Yeah,
and like you said, you're making everybody happy. But name the one player that you either played with, played against, that you were just in awe of. Like you look like, man, this guy's unbelievable. Or like especially played against where you know those days where you looked at the schedule, you're like, oh no.
Yes,
I'm gonna have nightmares for the next 3 days.
So Sabonis for sure, even if it was end of his career, this guy was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
I remember this game, our famous game in Macau against Žalgiris here. He scored 25 points. He killed me. Until he was fouled out, I couldn't stop him. Listen, he's shooting three-point shots. I think he had 4 from 5. And his hook shot from 10 meters above, you cannot see that ball. And he just like schooled me like a kid, you know. And especially he was one of my idols, you know.
Of course,
with his passing abilities and... He was the guy that I was like, I was so happy to play against. But I had luck through career, and like I told you, Dino Raja. Even, you know,
Dino was amazing.
Dino was something really special. But, you know, and also in Euroleague, you had the guys like Batiste.
Yeah.
Reyes, when he was younger, you know, in that time.
Still tough, of course.
Scola. You know, you had the guys that they were like, you know, Smodish. Like, you didn't want to play against, you know, I have to play against him. It wasn't, you know...
Yeah.
They were tough guys.
People don't realize that when you're at the top of your game, you still look at the video and you're like, oh, God, I got to play against this guy. Are you kidding me? I do not want to go up against
him. You know that you're going to get elbows.
Yeah.
You're going to beat you. It doesn't, you know, do
to
everything.
To me, it was Daryl Middleton.
Oh, it was me. For me, it was also. Why,
yeah.
Daryl? No.
He was the worst, man.
Why?
I would see. It was, first of all, he played for Barcelona when I was playing, and it was like, not only do I have to play in this crazy Barcelona-Real Madrid game, but I have to play against Daryl Middleton on top of it because his center of gravity was so low and he was so difficult to move around.
Look, he was the one. Also, he was one of the guys that, my God, what I will do. I cannot post him down.
No?
I cannot move him. I cannot pass him. So, okay, I go out and shoot the ball. If go easy, I'm excellent. But otherwise, you don't, this guy, you know, it's...
Yeah, you mentioned Savas, and when I played against Savas when I was in Victoria and he was in Valladolid in Forum, I remember looking at him and saying to myself, he's just a big nothing.
No,
I mean, really, like nothing. But then I went to Madrid and I started playing with him on a daily basis and practicing, and I was like, I've never seen anybody play like this in my life. It's just his vision, his ability to shoot, his ability to do basically everything on the court was just... I would be in awe at practice on a daily basis. Go, man, this guy's amazing.
I was always like thinking, you know, this guy had torn both Achilles. It's like you, in all these injuries that he had, it was cooling us. It's like
I always say thank God for those injuries. Otherwise, I don't know what he would have been.
He would be in NBA a long time ago.
Yeah, but I mean, he would have dominated that also.
I dominated anyway.
Yeah, he dominated anyway. Yeah. So now you've been manager here since 2013. What? Let's get on to your like post-playing retirement. What are your basic functions here as a GM? Typical GM, signing players, bringing coaches.
It's, you know, Maccabi, I have to say we are like one family. There is no one decision. There is no one guy that making all the calls. It's, of course, when it's come to the negotiation with players, that it's coming to managing the team or this, it's, I have a major role, but...
You bring him here to this place. You bring him here to Portovino.
No, but we have our, you know, we have our meetings on a weekly basis with the owners. With the, our owners are very involved in in business. This is, I have a president that is 50. This year is celebrating 50th year of
in the club.
In the club, it's something that is really unique. He's a walking legend. He has 86 titles. You know, somebody has 86 titles. I mean, there is no leagues with 86 titles, not clubs, and. It's really, you know, experience and what he passed in his life, you know, it's open encyclopedia, you know, can talk to him and get such a knowledge. It's really unique. And I have to say, you know, I really feel support of them and the highest level. And we all live like a family. They appreciate how I'm living for this club. And it's a club that is owned by families already for, right. You know, they're part of the sponsorship and then become company. So. It's unique place to work. We have lots of difficulties, of course, like everybody does. But
when you have so many hands mixing the pot, also it becomes a little bit more complicated.
It's unique. It's more complicated, but you know it's working like this for many years, and something that gave also success. You know, this club was 16 times in Final Four and won six titles and. It's always can do some things better or this, but this is our way.
And you come in 2013, and the first year you win with David Blatt, you guys win the EuroLeague.
Wow, what a crazy year.
That first was incredible. Game in the Final Four.
Wow, until Final Four, we had so many stories until we came there. Also, you know, we had some, of course, you need to have a luck to be... In semifinal, we meet with Milano.
With Milano, yeah.
And then and we were 12 points down, 2 minutes to go, and they beat them there. And of course, they couldn't beat us here.
And that was the Final Four on their home court.
And Final Four on their home court, and we beat them best of five. Of course, the two games here they were sold out, and then we come in Milano that nobody give us any chance. You had the first game, you had the CSKA, and if you win, you play against Real that beat 40 points Barcelona.
Right.
So, first game we beat CSKA, God knows how, but we beat them.
Nobody knows,
but we beat them.
No, some of us know.
And then, of course, came 10,000 Israeli people to Milano.
That was incredible. I came to that game on the Sunday, on the day of the finals.
So you saw the carousel.
It was just incredible. There was everywhere. Yellow.
And you know, funny thing, they said so Jimmy sold out before, and they are coming, no tickets, and somehow Jimmy's full of yellow. How? I mean, nobody knows, but of course we came Real, and we won on the end. It was incredible. The people was, you know, square was full, and it was amazing start of my career.
Yeah. Now I'm going to bring up the tough part. Since then, it hasn't been so easy. No. Things have kind of taken a little bit of a downhill slide. You guys spent a couple of years where you haven't even been in the Israeli finals.
We did some mistakes. Some of the mistakes were forced also by the rules we have. Hmm. We have toughest rules in EuroLeague.
For your national players, you're saying?
National players, domestic championship.
Tell me about the Vučić Basketball Academy. Is it in Split?
Yeah, it was in Split. We started in Rijeka. It was in Split. Unfortunately, I had to stop it because we had a great project, really great project.
You had two
NBA players. Žižić was also part of Academy. He went to Cibona, then he went to, now he's in Cleveland. And Bender, the same year they were both drafted, 1-22.
They were both drafted in 2016.
Yes, Bender was draft number 4 and Bender was draft number 23. Really amazing project, but you know, Maccabi is smart, the owners are smart, and they saw what I'm doing, so they offer also Bender to come to Maccabi, coach to come to Maccabi. my coach also helped Maccabi Academy to establish and the way.
Oh, okay.
So out of this Maccabi Academy, we have now these
so
three
you brought them here.
Bender was part of Maccabi, then went drafted to Phoenix. Croatia has always good talents. It's just a matter of time if you, somebody will set up the project like I did it,
right.
And somebody else, we always will produce the high-level players. Croatia is a small country, 4 million people, we have 22 NBA players.
You know, yeah,
just
crazy.
City Split has 7. Yeah. So we know how to do it, we just, you know, it's a matter of time somebody will take a project like I did to open it. You know, Academy is a great project, it was for me, it was fun to, you know, Bender was came in my Academy age of 11. And I saw his, you know, from the kid, the baby,
right,
to the
exactly.
to the draft. It was an amazing journey.
And obviously, this is your academies that help kids, as you're saying. And we're lucky enough, the two of us, and I feel pretty honored to be in such a group with amazing ex-players and legends, and call us whatever you want to call us. But the one team,
yeah.
You're the global one team ambassador. I know what it means for me,
yeah.
But I want to know what it means for you, because I kind of follow in your footsteps there, and I'm so happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, I'm from first day when they established it. I get called from our Abby and Vita and the great girls that started this, to see this kid happiness, to give them
it's
unique. You saw this how it is, and it's developed to be a great project of thousands of people, and we continue to be this. It's like I said to Abby and the girls from EuroLeague, whenever you want, I'm available.
I did the same thing I did in London. She invited me to Abby. We're talking about Abby Martin from the EuroLeague,
yeah.
who's our main girl when it comes to the one team. And she invited me to do the fan zone in London. And then she invited me again in Madrid the year after. And that's when I went to Madrid. I'm like, I want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
You know, because even though these kids are smiling and laughing, having a good time, like I went home, I felt better about myself.
Of course,
I was like, what these kids don't see is that when I go home, how good I feel about it. And
we have also as a club, you know, I'm working in the club as a part of ambassador projects, and we always starting now. Soon we start a new project that we're going to present to EuroLeague and to this bring a community. We always going to the tough communities that they have a very tough life. These kids, or they are without parents, or they kind of disabilities or something, and they're coming to our games. They come to warm up with our players.
They come,
you know, these things that you see this happiness, this pure happiness of these kids that you give them hope. You give them something that, you know, they want to be part of it, and this is
it's just, to me, it's all about what I've learned later in my life, not while I was playing, unfortunately. I wish I would have learned a little bit earlier, but because I think I could have been more influential when I was actually a player. But you learn about giving back, you know, giving back that was given to you.
You know, my idea of my starting my academy was this, giving back to the kids.
Right.
And I invested a huge amount of money that I didn't get it back or something. It was just something that, like you said, this happiness that you give to these kids, the happiness that you give to this hope to people. And you said, this sport gave me a lot, and I really deserve it to get it back. You know, we have good life, we succeed to make for our families good living and everything. And to give back to this, you know, to next generation, to give this, it's something beautiful. And I see that, and what is making me happy, I see lots of players are doing this, or camps, or academies, or supporting the different charities. And this is the way that I'm happy that people are going.
I think players are more conscious about it now than when we were. There's more opportunity also now than there was 20 years ago for me. But I think players are more conscious about it, and it's almost like a good feeling thing, but it's great for their own image also, especially now with social networking
and the way you have to get
out there with everybody.
Of course. But, you know, you can see also the players that finish careers like Papaloukas. Great project in Greece. I was impressed the way how he invested money. He'll never get this money back, but he did it something for the community in Greece. The kids can come in the warm, great place to practice, to develop the abilities. And I see lots of projects are going. Milos Teodosic, amazing camps in the summers that he's doing for the kids, and giving the hopes. You know, in Croatia also there is some camps that coming. Also this great thing. Also NBA is doing a good thing with the. Coming, bringing the players in Europe.
Keeping
this sport, giving back to this sport, it's important.
Well, my man, I honestly can't thank you enough for your time, your patience, couple of the drinks also by the way. It's an incredible journey for you, and I'm happy that you were kind enough to share it with us here on the crossover. And it's honestly nice to call you a friend, but I'm truly honored to be an ambassador of the one team with you and with so many other people, Lisa, Papa Lucas, Moles, everybody. It's just been an amazing journey for me, and I thank you for your time. I thank you for everything, and hopefully you're going to listen to your own story on the crossover, my man.
Nicola, my pleasure. My pleasure. It was really, really nice to talk to you, and I'm happy to listen all your crossovers because people listening these stories really can enjoy, and you brought this to the great level.
I hope so. Thank you very much. I appreciate
thank
it.
Bye.
Take care, bud.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode, and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.